Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
We are here with the Daniels. We're talking about their blockbuster art house hit, Everything Everywhere All at Once, which just won 2 Gotham Awards, including Best Picture. Here they are. So let's talk about the man. First of all, congratulations on your Gotham Award.
Thank you so much.
Let's talk about the mammoth success here. Not only is it A24's biggest grossing film ever, $70 million here in the U.S., $103 million worldwide. This is like the biggest art house hit of the year. You know, the poor business is going through a scenario right now where we don't know what works at the art house, what crosses over, what are adults, you know, will adults see things outside of Marvel films? Here you guys just hit this grand slam. Did you ever have any kind of sense that this was going to play to such a massive crowd?
Well, thank you so much for that lovely setup of a question. We like to chase things that feel impossible. And I think one thing that felt impossible to us was actually creating a indie film that could, you know, survive this climate where, you know, blockbusters, big franchises, superhero films have kind of become the only success stories lately. And so very early on, we were like, this is going to be impossible, but can we take our love of big, fun action films and our love of personal idiosyncratic indie films, and can we combine them into a single thing that we, you know, not only will we be very proud of, but also hopefully will connect with a bigger audience, specifically in theaters, because I think this film was very much designed to be seen with a bunch of strangers. And so to us, they were like, okay, that's a really interesting goal. Let's spend some time trying to get there. That being said, we didn't think it was actually going to do that well. You know, it was right after the pandemic. I mean, the pandemic's still happening, but like right after theaters started opening up, and we weren't sure how audiences were going to react to the film. So this is, on the one hand, it was the goal, but on the other hand, we never thought it was attainable. So it's exciting to be here right now.
So let's go way back to the beginning. Because I remember this was a project held in secret. It was like, what's the Daniels' next movie? And it was like, well, who's going to be in it? And I just remember the great degree of secrecy. But you wrote this obviously pre-pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it like? Was it a hard sell? Did you have to circulate it? Or was it always a slam dunk? You had already been in business with A24 and they were there immediately. And then the Russos. So tell me about, because I'm curious, like, oh, we, you know, because it's such an ambitious project that I'm just curious, how easy was it to get mounted?
Yeah, I mean, I think compared to a lot of our filmmaker friends, I feel so lucky that it was pretty easy, you know, like, and sometimes people are like, how on earth did you pitch this crazy movie? And we say, like, well, our last movie was about a farting corpse. And then we went into these meetings and we were like, we want our next one to be an accessible action adventure starring like Kung Fu superstars. It was like a much easier pitch.
Yeah.
and so we, you know, had a vague sense of it, brought it up to the Russos. They wanted to finance it, and so we were like, okay, cool. But they ended up just kind of being part of the development for a while, and then we went to A24, who had been eager to be involved all along, and they were like, yes, please, please, please. And so we just went straight back to the same people we already had a relationship with for so many years, which is like so comforting to just be like, oh, we know each other on a first name basis already. And they like believed in it, even as big as actors fell in and out of it. They really championed the us and the project, not just kind of like the package deal or whatever.
Yeah. Honestly, the biggest struggles were, I think there were two. The first one was just our ambition was way too big and our skill set wasn't up to the task, you know? So we had to, I think we had to grow as filmmakers before we were ready to shoot the film. And so, or to even write the script, we had to really grow and learn. And that took many years. And we were so grateful to all our partners for being patient with us during that time. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of the puzzle was just the casting of the film was not always easy. Cause we knew each character had to have a very specific kind of performance, and finding the right people, especially within the Asian American acting community, just because it is smaller than the rest of the acting community. It was an interesting process to find the right people, and we're so happy that we, you know, took the time and effort to really go hunting, because this cast is amazing, and this cast is they're the ones who made this movie what it is. And, but those two were the hardest parts. Everything else was actually people were very supportive, and we're really grateful for that.
We're also like a little censored from it sometimes. Our producer Jonathan Wong has been with us over 10 years, and like, he lets us focus on like the passion side, and he's like, all right guys, I'm going to dive into the industry, and I'll come back with the emergencies.
Right. Unsung hero for sure.
Yeah.
Was Michelle, was she the first one to board?
Yeah. So like the whole movie kind of wouldn't exist if Michelle, not only did she agree to do it, she like enthusiastically agreed to do it, you know? And that was right when Crazy Rich Asians came out, when she came on board, and that made the whole thing a lot easier to kind of sell to other collaborators and folks, you know.
But here's the thing, Michelle Yeoh has a gravity to her. So the moment you tell any other cast member, any other producer, or even like a crew member, that it's going to star Michelle Yeoh, it definitely attracts certain people. I mean, you can definitely say that Jamie Lee Curtis signed up for this project specifically because she's always wanted to work with Michelle. And I think that's like I said, yeah, she's an EP on the project. This is her movie, and we're so grateful to be a part of her legacy.
Yeah. I was going to say, because the movie is such a beautiful homage right down to the bullseye of Michelle and her canon. I was curious, what would this movie still have been made if she wasn't attached?
Not really. Like we like early drafts, it was a little more fluid, but then by the time we gave it to her, we had like, it had become such a story of a mother, but also she's in every scene of the movie. She had to do kung fu and emotion and comedy and pull an audience in. So like the producers were like, what happens if she says no? And we were really low on ideas. Our only idea was to do like a performance art prank movie where we cast Dan Kwan's mom. And the whole joke is that a non-actor is getting swept up in the Matrix. But that one would have been a really challenging movie to make or finance.
Now, this is me asking because I want to know, and I'm sure I know you've probably been asked this a million times, but I want to know. I mean, Ki-Wei Kwan.
Mm-hmm.
Where was he? How did you get him back? I mean, one of the most beautiful things is when we were at South By was when Michelle said on stage, "Don't go away." Exactly. Mm-hmm. Don't go away. Where was he? How did the whole idea come about to approach him?
Right.
And where was he in his career?
Yeah. Yes. Well, we kind of have parallel stories. Like he tells his side of the story. We tell his, our side of the story, and they kind of are happening simultaneously, which is kind of really interesting. But, our side of the story was that we were really struggling to find the right performer for this job, specifically because we knew we wanted them to be able to pull off all of the action and the fight choreography. But oftentimes those type of men are also, you know, they have a certain look. They're very tough. The way that they perform, or not even perform, they just exist in a very confident space. And we knew that this character, Wayman, had to be just so sweet, just down to his core, so that like even sometimes if we were to audition certain people, you could tell a little bit that they're acting soft rather than truly you know, being soft. And so we were having a hard time figuring out like who to cast for this role. And one day I was scrolling on Twitter and I saw someone post like a meme of Short Round. And I perked up. I'm like, what is Short Round up to right now? Because I did the math in my head. I'm like, I think he might be the right age. Like, where did he go? And we started doing research, watching YouTube videos. I quickly found out that he was on the stunt team for Bryan Singer's X-Men movie. And I was like, wait a minute. And then
we were like, he's a martial artist. Yeah. He's Asian American. He speaks Chinese and English already.
All right. That's the other thing. If someone they had to speak, you know, three different languages. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, it was a very, very small, like the Venn diagram of all those things was a small candidate pool.
So we really got our hopes up before we auditioned him.
Yeah.
And then the miracle is that at the exact same time he had stepped away from Hollywood after being kind of demoralized, you know, after being like a superstar as a kid, the roles just dried up. The auditions were like kind of demeaning, and
especially since all of his friends, you know, all this Goonies co-stars, he was watching them get auditions every week. And so that was actually extremely hard for him. And so he left and decided to go to film school to go behind the camera. And
yeah,
he's had the most fascinating life, like just working in Taiwan on soap operas or going to Hong Kong to be the first AD for Wong Kar Wai. You know, his life has been really interesting.
But he was lucky for us living in Los Angeles, like not far from where we wanted to shoot the movie. And he had just watched Crazy Rich Asians, got an intense FOMO, and wanted to get back into acting because he was convinced there might be interesting roles again.
So this is happening the same month that we were having our conversations.
Yeah. So he read the script and then got really freaked out about how badly he wanted the part. and he came in and like killed it in the audition. He like really worked hard to prove himself. He instantly won us over as soft Waymond, and then really worked hard to get the intense alpha Waymond version of him, you know, to differentiate them and work on those switches. And it was a miracle, you know. It was 100% the perfect person.
And now there's a rumor that Jeff Cohen of the Goonies is his lawyer.
That's not a rumor. That's a fact. Yeah, man. He came to set. It's surreal. We got to hang out with Chung.
That is also hilarious. Just the fact that they're actually, I think they like live close to each other. They're still really good friends.
Yeah.
Like that is just so sweet. The two of them it's very inspiring friendship. Yeah.
Now, Stephanie Sue, talk about, look, I was watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, knew of her wonder there. How did she impress you guys? How did she come on your radar?
The funny thing is we did an episode of Nora from Queens while trying to get the movie greenlit, and went out there, and it actually became this really fun project to meet a whole bunch of like incredible Asian American actors, because our episode had tons of guest stars. So we got to meet like Jamie Chung and Simu Liu and Harry Shum Jr. But there was one role that needed to be cast that was pretty prominent, and we did auditions and met Stephanie that way. And she got cast as a character, ironically named Shushu, in that show. And we just like were instant creative kind of kindred spirits. So we came back to LA and started auditions for Joy. And told the casting director, like, we know someone incredible out in New York. Can we get Stephanie Hsu to come in?
I will say, just like the first time we met her in that audition room, it was very funny because we met a lot of really talented, funny people that day, just kind of walking them through the audition room. And she comes in and she's short. She's like 5 foot tall, kind of unassuming, just wearing a hoodie. And we're like, okay, what do you got? And we threw her a really difficult prompt for her to try for the first take. And she just, you can watch the chemistry in her brain as she's doing the calculus of how to, you know, combine all the tones we were asking her to combine. And the moment we said action, she just like fell into this version of the character that like blew everyone away. Everyone actually, we wanted her to do it again. I was like, can you do that again? And so we actually had her do the sequence twice, just because it was so fun to watch. And I think what people are seeing now on the screen is only like a fraction of what she's capable of, in our movie at least. I think she is like one of the most talented, interesting, playful people we've ever worked with. So I'm so happy that people are getting to see her and that she's, I feel like she's going to have a really wonderful career.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now, the entire concept... I mean, you start grounded. It's a family. They're struggling with their business. They're being strong-armed by the IRS. Their daughter is very non-traditional. And then it becomes, you know, this LSD Molly trip. And I'm curious, how did that come to be? Were you, because what's interesting is I watched it with family. I saw it in a big audience at South By. And it played through the roof and watched it with family, and people in the room were crying. Mm-hmm. They were really moved by it by the end.
Wow.
And I'm just like, how did that all come to be? Was it all this whole thing that we have multiple, you know, we have multiple lives and rebirth?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of, before we pitched it to anybody, we'd been kicking it around as like a half-baked idea. And then we kind of came up with the structure of like, start with a grounded Chinese American family, then have our movie get interrupted by more and more multiverses until meaninglessness sets in. And from the very beginning, that was kind of what excited us, was like making a movie that's really relatable and then ruining it. then can we fix it? Can you bring the audience back from a mess? And I think once we came with that structure, we felt like it was like a really therapeutic concept personally, because the world was so overwhelming and messy. And it was like, oh, if we can capture that messiness and try to pull ourselves and the audience back, like that'll be like a really emotional journey. And then but we didn't think it would take 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Did you shoot this during COVID?
We shot it right before.
Yeah, we got shut down with one more day left of or we shut ourselves down with one more day left of principal photography. So it was, yeah, it was a very bizarre night.
Last day of shooting was gonna involve James Hong. We were like reading the headlines and we were like, no, I don't want to shoot a movie with a 91-year-old superstar when, yeah, there's this confusing epidemic, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's weird promoting this movie that we shot over like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
When did you do that pickup day?
We did like 4 or 5 pickup days later that year, and we shot rocks. We shot some green screen footage.
Michelle was in Paris at the time, and yeah, so we had to do a remote shoot, like an all-nighter remote shoot that was pretty miserable, but you know, everyone was such a trooper. But yeah, we
had a lot of little pieces,
little pieces
carefully, slowly, yeah, safely shot, you know, because, yeah, of the pandemic.
So she was in Paris in a remote studio.
Yes.
Yeah. She was with a French crew, and we were at like 3 a.m. We're on a Zoom call with her, coaching her through an emotional scene that she had to shoot on green screen. And yeah, then we shot the backgrounds here in LA.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an action scene.
It's no, the scene in the van where Waymond is talking to her about divorce. So he had to act opposite a stand-in, and she had to act opposite a French first AD. And then it's a testament to both of them as actors that, their performances just feel totally authentic, even though the circumstances were my least favorite kind of thing to do to an actor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And also shout out to our VFX team for making it just feel seamless. And our camera team, just camera and lighting. Everyone did a really great job where it feels so seamless, even though it was probably one of the hardest shoot days of my life, just because of how I don't know if anyone's ever shot remotely. It is the opposite of what makes filmmaking magic, you know,
fun or organic.
Yeah, exactly.
Where was the bulk of this shot? Was it in Simi Valley?
Mm-hmm. So we shot for 8 weeks, and I think we're in Simi Valley for 6 of them, and then went to like the San Fernando Valley for a week, and then down into LA for a whole bunch of little stuff for 1 week.
But yeah, our goal was to try to maximize the budget in every way possible. And one of the most expensive things you can do is to move your production. You know, it just costs so much money and time. And so we decided, let's find a building and try to use it for as much as we can. And that there was this big office building in Simi Valley that was just perfect. And we turned it into like a mini studio, building sets within the building all over, you know, in the cafeteria and in the hallways. We're just constantly building little sets everywhere.
And then what was the hardest part? Was it the VFX or was it the stunt work on this?
I wonder what was hardest for us.
I mean, so the really lovely thing about the, both of those things. Honestly, the hardest job for most things is just finding the right people, right? That's the most important thing. Yeah. If you find the right person for the job, 90% of your work is done. And so that was actually really difficult, just finding the right team for our low budget action movie, because this stuff should take a long time. It should be really expensive. But because we've been making really low budget music videos for a very long time, we have a lot of tricks up our sleeves, but we just need to find the right collaborators who would be willing to trust us and believe we're going to do this safely, we're going to do this quickly, and it's going to be fun. And so we brought on Tim Ulick, our stunt coordinator that we have been working with for about 10 years now. And so he's a good friend and a collaborator. And then one of the most important aspects of the film was just the fight choreography, and finding the right people for that was really difficult. But we ended up finding the Marshall Club on YouTube. They're just a bunch of friends on YouTube who studied all of the old Hong Kong action films that we loved and we grew up with, and they were just the perfect collaborators. And so that stuff was actually, it was physically hard, and it was like taxing on the day, but it was really fun and way more seamless than it should have been, because I mean we were working with Michelle Yeoh, so like you only need to do a few takes with her. So it's like, it's things like that that made it really fun and like surprisingly easy. The VFX was tough, just because we were creating a completely new pipeline for this film. We knew we didn't want to go to a traditional VFX vendor or studio, just because in the past that hasn't always been the best for our process.
And we had a couple meetings, and
we
talked about it with our producers, and we were like, if any studio is going to laugh us out of the room if we go in and suggest what we want to do, you know, but we knew we could do it based on how we approached all our short films.
And so we brought on our buddy, who's also a music video director, Zach Stoltz, to become our supervisor. And he pulled together a small team of our friends, and basically from the ground up during a pandemic, invented a whole pipeline for all of us to be able to share projects and work on each other's shots and you know, keep it all organized. You know, it was like 500, 600 shots. I don't know.
Yeah.
Between 9 people, we all had to kind of work together to make it happen. But
in both cases, the challenge was the system, finding the right process and people, but which is not how people usually talk about filmmaking, you know, usually you're talking about like lens choice or, you know, but we had to figure out what's the process that's going to help us pull off this crazy ambitious thing and have a good time, you know?
Yeah. So we were constantly doing things the wrong way, technically the wrong way, but it was the right way for this movie. And I think that's like a big thing that we always try to tell other filmmakers, is like, sometimes the process that you're supposed to be doing is going to be so counterproductive to your film. And like, you got to constantly rethinking how we do things. This is Daniel Scheinert's secret weapon. He's very much like a, I don't know how to put it. You're very skeptical of any system or institution, and he needs,
like, why do we do it that way?
Exactly. He wants to dissect every single process
and
until
then
it makes
the
sense
other part of it that we yeah. do is like try to see problems before they come.
Yeah.
And manage expectations, because doing things differently can be a nightmare for crew, you know,
yes.
where they're like, there's a reason we do it this way. And so there's a lot of pre-production discussion about like what could go wrong if we change the way it's normally done, how
yes.
can we manage expectations? Like, and we tried, you know, to tell our stunt team and tell our VFX team and tell, you know, the camera team what we were doing differently and why.
Yeah.
And be like, is that okay with you guys? You think that'll work?
During the pandemic, when you were assembling the film, did it change greatly? You know, because everyone went into lockdown and a lot of artists everyone started rethinking things and reassessing whatever they shot. Did things change greatly or no? Not so much.
There was something like cosmically weird about how thematically appropriate our movie was to the pandemic. Like, we
yeah.
would go into work and I'd be like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this character is talking about what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
And what I'm feeling right now is something I've never felt in my entire life. You know, like, you know, like, there was a really coincidental kind of feeling, and it kind of made us just feel urgent about getting it out there. Cause it felt like a story that people could really use.
Yeah,
you know,
we were
using it.
We were
ourselves.
We would do like small test screenings for friends just to track how we were doing. And almost every one of those little screenings, someone would say, I think you guys should release this movie right now. Like, whatever you're
yeah.
doing right now, just finish it so you can put it out.
It's like a good sign if people in the test screening are like, can I watch it again? And we're like,
oh,
no,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, so our first test screening, someone's like, when are you guys doing another test screening? I need to show this to my mom. You know, it's like, it was just the right time and the right place. And for us, most of the work during the pandemic was us just refining our original plan. So the plan, basically the structure of the film and most of the biggest pieces are exactly how we wrote it. It was just fine tuning the energy and the tone so that people could, mm-hmm. so we could make the chaos, you know, palatable and understandable for people. Because like early test screens, I think sometimes it was a little too chaotic or whatever, but that was mostly what we're doing, was just the engineering and executing our ambitious goal. And we're
mm-hmm.
so grateful that we had the time for it. And A24 is very patient with us. But yeah, for the most part, we stayed the course, and we're so proud that it worked.
Now, let's talk more about those test screenings.
Yeah.
Before Light hit the screen in Austin, Texas, A24 knew they had something special.
Mm.
And I'm curious, was that coming away from those test screenings, were they like, oh my God, we've never seen reactions like this before? They had films, they had to sit on films and decide, okay, this film's going to be distributed theatrically, this film is
mm-hmm.
not. And did that come out of a particular test screening where they're like, oh my God, this is off the charts?
Yeah, so we got our process from our editor friend Matt Hannum, who cut Swiss Army Man, and so when we do a ton of internal test screenings where when we're editing, we show it to maybe 3 to 5 people every few weeks and talk to them a bunch about what their experience was like, and we don't tell any producers what happened. And it's just for us to kind of catch our bearings and orient ourselves. And so that was all we did until Picture Lock and A24 trusted us a lot.
That's one
to
thing
to do it that way.
Yeah. One thing that's really interesting about A24's process is they don't do any test screenings for the actual edit, really. It's like very much
about, at least with us.
Well, at least for, yeah, who knows what happens with other films. But then, so they're very trusting of our process. And the only reason they do test screenings at the end is just for marketing purposes, which is really like a real gift as a filmmaker to have
mm-hmm.
a collaborator like that.
And there was one time where we sent a link out and got feedback from a bunch of people right towards the end to kind of
yeah.
be like, hey, is this good?
Right.
But yeah, so we only did one traditional test screening ever. Or no, I think they did two, but I went to one
yeah.
where it was for marketing purposes, a theater with like hundreds of people there. And I went like with our producer and manager, Josh, and I was pretty nervous, you know, to hear, you know, some random person who came in off the street say this movie's confusing, you know, and too long. And that was what I was prepared for, because that's, you know, test screenings, they don't even know what they're going to see. And that screening went so well. I had so much fun. Like, people were like screaming and laughing and cheering during the butt plug fight. And I was like, oh. And it was the first time I ever saw The Rock scene with a big audience. And so like, I was very shocked how much fun I had that night. And I think that was the night where we all doubled down on the theatrical experience, et cetera. But they, their takeaway was that it's a hard movie to market because it's a hard movie to describe, but that the scores were very high for, would you recommend this to someone? And so then, you know, we did a slow and steady release, knowing that like people are going to talk about it. That's our best hope. You know?
Yeah. They did. They actually, they decided A20 was very smart of them. And we were kind of like, not sure if it was going to work, but they were like, the marketing isn't going to be what makes this movie work. Like, no one's going to really understand what the marketing is. And so we're not going to spend too much money on that compared to some other movies. Instead, we're going to put all our resources into giving out free tickets. And so for like weeks before we just went like wide,
advanced screenings.
They were doing advanced screenings in every city for like, you know, like two or three a week sometimes, just to get people in the seat, because they knew if people saw it, they would bring their friends. And it was like, we weren't sure if it was going to work, but they were really confident in it. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. I don't know how to distribute a movie, but I was like, what are you doing? You're just giving away like thousands of tickets. This is dumb, guys. Like, you're renting theaters to give away. but no, they knew what they were doing.
Can you share with us what's next?
Yeah, man. Award season, press, interviews.
Until we die.
We're going to become podcasters, public figures, no more movies.
We have a handful of projects. We just signed this wonderful deal with Universal, and so far Donna and her whole team, they've been so welcoming, and we're really grateful for this opportunity. So we're working on a few projects over there, trying to figure out which one's going to be the one that rises to the top. We're working on one that is probably in the same vein as Everything Everywhere, but somehow bigger, which is a little scary. I don't know how, it feels even more ambitious and more scary to me, but I'm excited about that one. And then there's another one that is much smaller, like a weird character thing that we are excited to chase, but we don't know when it's gonna happen. Yeah. So vague answers, but
yeah, but they're all you know, various genre mashups. They're all a little perverted, a little emotional, and just depending on our mood each week, we're trying to write a little on each one, you know?
The Daniels. Everything, everywhere, all at once. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. This was
fun.
Thank
you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.